Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
All right, good morning, good morning. It's Sunday morning. It's the 2nd of March, 2008. I don't know if you can hear it in the background, but the birds are chirping in Rome. Sure sign of spring. They tell me it comes early and fast here, and we're looking forward to it. It's not like the winter was really, really rough, but it'll be nice. It's early. It's 6 o'clock in the morning, and I just felt like it was time to do solder smoke here. Big radio project progress here on all kinds of projects. The shack is a mess, but it's a good mess. It's the mess that results from real radio work and progress. So it's a kind of a happy kind of mess. You guys know what I mean. All kinds. There's the bells. Bells are striking 6 here in Santa Maria di Trastevere. Santa Maria in Trastevere. All right. First, I want to tell you guys. I've been on the air a lot with the HW8, and I have to say, as a QRP homebrew operator, I want to make an observation. I'm sure a lot of you guys feel the same way. I like it when I come across a station with chirp in the signal. I like it when I come across a tone that's not really technically T9. You know what I mean, because for me, that's almost a sure sign that the guy on the other end is... running something that's at least partially homebrew. And I've had a couple of QSOs on the HW8 in that category. I hear this thing, just a slight chirp, nothing to complain about, nothing to really cause anybody any trouble, but it's almost like the characteristic of a homebrew rig, and in at least one of the cases, that was what was going on. I knew that I wasn't speaking... or I wasn't communicating with one of the ICOMs or Yaesus or Kenwoods that dominate the ham bands these days. And sure enough, the guy I was talking to was running homebrew QRP. And that's great. He was right here in Rome, and I'm hoping to track him down and have a face-to-face contact here with a fellow QRP homebrewer in Rome. In that regard, we've had real... great fun getting to know the local radio amateurs here in Rome, and here's a story that you guys will like. I fired up my 20 meter homebrew ceramic resonator double sideband transceiver. I built this thing in the Azores a while back, and I never really used it that much. It puts out less than a watt double sideband on 20 meters. I've got, you could see it in the picture, my shack picture on the gadgeteer.news webpage. You could see it's a little copper clad box sitting up on top of the Drake 2B. And I've taken it with me to various locations. It's been with me in France and the Dominican Republic and the United States. So I've used it from all those locations. But the power is so low, and it's double sideband. It just, it's painful. With poor antennas, it's just painful to operate at those low power levels on phone. I mean, I know that you can do it, and I know it's very satisfying. I had much better luck with it when we had some sunspots, but these days it's not a pleasant activity. But the other day I fired it up just to have something homebrew fired up here in the shack, and I was tuning around on 20 meters, and I heard a couple of Italy Zero stations, and that means they're in Lazio here close to me, talking. And at the end of their QSO, I gave one of them a shout, and it was Italy Kilo Zero, Juliet Nancy, India, Fabio. And we had a great contact. I think I told you about it in the last show. But then we followed up, because it turns out that Fabio works very close to where I work. And so one day last week, it was Tuesday, we got together, and got together for coffee. And I was thinking, as I was getting ready to go to work that day, I said, what should I bring to for Fabio? I don't have any QSL cards yet. So my first thought was, okay, let me print out a picture of the station. So I printed out the picture that's on the Gadgeteer News website, and I stuck that in my pocket. And then I said, wait a second, I can go a step further than that. And I disconnected the antenna, and I disconnected the power, and I disconnected the mic and the headphones, and I stuck the whole rig, which is about the size of a book, about the size of a hardcover book. And I just stuck it in my briefcase, and off I went to work with a 20-meter double sideband transceiver in my briefcase. This is kind of a strange thing to bring to work, and I kind of, especially if you work at the kind of place that I work, might raise some eyebrows. If you think it's hard getting stuff on an airplane, come see me. I got through the morning, and we were going to meet up at midday, and out I went with the transceiver in the bag. I didn't actually have it tucked under my arm. It's kind of scary looking. You guys know what I mean. Anyway, we met up and went to a coffee shop, really, and it was quite crowded at the time that we met, but that didn't stop us. And we talked about the rig, and I showed him the picture, and he was quite impressed with the picture. And I said, yeah, but I said, I can go a step further here. And I opened up the case, and there it was. So I took it out, took it out of the case, and set it up there on the coffee bar. And people were giving us some kind of strange looks. I think I may have pushed the envelope a little bit when I pulled out a little screwdriver and removed the screws to show them the circuitry inside. I think that might have been a real extreme knack symptom right there. But you know how it is when you have the knack. You know, you just want to do that kind of thing. So I did. But anyway. It was great fun meeting up with Fabio, and we've had a number of subsequent contacts on 20 meters. It's great because the band is, you know, in the evening most of the time it's dead, so it's actually turning out to be pretty good for local contacts. And last night Fabio and I were yakking away on 20 meters with some of the amidst all the chaos caused by the SSB contest that's underway this weekend, and we were joined, to my great delight, by Italy Zero Yankee Radio, Giorgio. Giorgio is the fellow that lives quite close to me here, and John Franco and I went over to his place and helped him raise the big antenna. Apparently, he's got the two element quad up. Fine business, Giorgio, and. We had a nice chat, and there was a real. His station is high power with big sophisticated antennas, and mine is, well, the opposite end of the spectrum. But we had a really great three-way QSO with Fabio and Giorgio and I yakking away on 20 meters, me in double sideband mode. So that was a lot of fun. So yeah, a good homebrew. Week. I made major improvements on my antenna. I've been telling you about my clandestine antenna challenges here. Well, yesterday morning I went up onto the roof. My antenna so far has been out the window down to the ground. And it's, like I said, it's amidst a whole bunch of buildings. And I've got one of the, it's not one of the ancient hills of Rome, but one of the most important hills of Rome, the Janiculum. Right outside my window and across the street. So talk about being between a rock and a hard place. My little antenna was between a huge apartment building and the Janiculum, with the only shot to the horizon being to the north, kind of shooting out over over St. Peter's and Hadrian's tomb. But anyway, so I figured things would be better if I was up on the roof, of course. And so I got my my equipment together, and yesterday morning, while the while normal people were asleep, I went up there with my 30 gauge wire and extended the antenna along the edge of the roof, and it's quite invisible. I'd be really surprised if anybody sees it or messes with it, and so I think it's going to work out okay. It's made a big improvement, and Fabio, at least at a local level, noticed a real big improvement in signal strength. So, man, this the little T network tuner that I built. I keep it right here next to the rig. It's not. I don't have it out by the. I know technically it should be out by the feed point where the coax meets the wire, but just for convenience sake, I keep it here. And I know I'm probably getting some additional loss because of SWR on the line, but the line is pretty short. I think the loss, I'm willing to accept the loss just for the convenience of being able to rapidly switch bands right here in the shack, and that's working out real well. And I can tune this thing up no problem on 80, 40, 20, and 15, and been having great fun with that. What else? Let's see, lots of stuff to report here. I'm trying to charge up my solar panels, and I have I've been having some success. I think it would be. I always like it. I mentioned this over the years here, and starting with discussions with Mike. There's a certain kind of attraction to running QRP with kind of electricity that you've made yourself with solar panels. So I have my old 12 volt gel cell. I think it's 7 amp hour battery down here on the floor, and I've got the two solar panels hooked up to it, and I'm getting there, guys. It's I check the voltage every once in a while. I have no control circuitry, by the way, in it. I just kind of trickle charge it, and I think the output of the solar panels is weak enough that it's not going to cause any damage to this battery. And little by little, it's getting up close to the 12 volt mark. Kind of like it doing it this way because it gives you the sense that the battery has been filled with electrons from photons that came directly from your solar panel. So the Volkswagen solar panels are there. By the way, I wanted to mention this. If anybody else is interested in these Volkswagen solar panels, I took a look at eBay yesterday, and there's about a dozen of them on sale there. They're very convenient. They got these suction cups. You just slap them in the window, and they worked out well for me. So if you guys, anybody's interested, I think they're going for like 10 or 20 bucks a piece on eBay. All of them are being bid on, so somebody is buying these things. But I did see about a dozen of them for sale on eBay if anybody's interested. It's kind of fun. The way the windows work here, they're more like doors. It's hard to explain, but they don't open up and down like our windows in the States do. It's just more like opening a big door. And I have the solar panels slapped into the window, and I can adjust to keep the panels at a right angle with the solar rays. I just reach over every once in a while and change the angle of the door. Open the door a little more or close the door a little bit. It's kind of the Armstrong method of solar panel alignment. And again, it adds another little element of homebrew and simplicity to it. Let's see, charging the solar panels. I've been using the new antenna to tune around and listen to things that I really didn't listen to too much. And I've discovered the European, or at least this part of Europe, AM frequency. I'm a big fan of AM, amateur radio AM. I used to listen to it all the time in the States, 3880, 3885, 7295. And when I was in Virginia, I was quite active on, especially on 40-meter AM with an old DX60 transmitter. I have info on this on the Gadgeteer.us website. Haven't heard too much of it from this side, but I was tuning around at 80 meters the other morning, and came across the frequency. I think it's 3705 kilohertz. And there's a station there with a big signal. He seems to be the leader of the pack there. It's Fox 6 Alpha Quebec Kilo. Very nice signal, and I'm not sure what he's running, but it sounds good. Sounds good even on the Drake 2B. Drake 2B sometimes is not the best receiver for AM because it's hard to get it broad enough to really to get the kind of the full effect of AM, especially when guys are not restricting their audio frequency too much as some guys do. So sometimes it sounds a bit constrained, but F6AQK's signal sounds quite good here. I usually can't hear too well the stations that he's talking to, but it's a pleasure to listen to him. So that's been great. Speaking of AM, man, the BBC did me in. I've been listening happily on my little Sony portable shortwave receiver to the BBC World Service. I guess on the the 60 meter band. Around 6.1, 6.2 megahertz. There was one frequency there with where the BBC or the Beeb, as we all affectionately called it, was coming through quite nicely here. And as I was getting ready for work in the morning, I'd be tuned to that frequency and listening to the morning news. And then in the evening before going to bed, we'd listen to the BBC World Service again. And then all of a sudden, boom, it's gone. And I thought there was something wrong with the, you know how it is, either something wrong with the receiver. Maybe I forgot the frequency. Maybe it's something, what's up? Maybe the, you know, propagate. It was kind of a sharp disappearance. It wasn't like it faded away. It was just gone. So I thought that I'd just forgotten the frequency. And it was weird because other European shortwave stations were coming through no problem. So where's the Beeb? I went to the website and there it is, this kind of, you know, man, it was just kind of a very disappointing announcement. Beginning February 18th, the BBC World Service has stopped its broadcast to Europe because of declining interest, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it seemed almost directed to me. Of course, I may have been one of the very few people listening to it, so... And they added insult to injury, guys, by having a note saying that, of course, in this day and age, there are many other ways to listen to the BBC World Service, including Digital Radio Mondiale. All right, I don't want to start talking bad about things digital because, of course, they have the place in our lives as we speak here on a completely digitized podcast. But you know what I mean. It's just not the same. I mean, sure, I can click on the thing on the computer and but it doesn't have that kind of fading in and fading out and the kind of charm, the kind of romance that comes from listening to a real shortwave broadcast, shortwave AM broadcast. So anyway, I think this is the shape of things to come, but I was disappointed to lose my direct shortwave connection to the Beeb. Anyway, there we go. What else do we have here to mention? Speaking of worldwide reach, I wanted to give you an update on the cluster map. I keep checking this cluster map bit of software that we put up there. It's kind of interesting. It doesn't capture everybody who listens to Solder Smoke. I've noticed that the cluster map is a bit of software, and I have it on the Gadgeteer.news website that tracks visitors to the SolderSmoke.com website, and I've noticed that it's kind of an advanced hit counter, but that displays a map of the visitors and they're with their locations, of course. Well, being a map, that's what it would do, right? But anyway, it doesn't seem to capture all of the visitors. We get Solder Smoke these days. The SolderSmoke.com website is getting about 5,000 or 6,000 visits a day now. Most of those, I think, are people their iTunes or Podcaster software just checking the RSS for updates, this, the RSS file. So that's what most of those are. And so I did a little bit of research, and it turns out the cluster map only kind of counts somebody and puts a dot up on the map for them if they actually visit the website and cause the cluster map to be printed on their to appear on their screen. So somebody who listens to Solder Smoke via an automatic podcast downloader program, and I think that's probably the majority of listeners these days, doesn't pop up on the screen. So it's not really a true reflection of everybody, but it's fun to see where the what's popping up there. And we've got some new ones this week. A couple of dots there in Brazil. Looks like probably Rio and Sao Paulo. There's one there from Paraguay that that was there a while back, so I think we have a listener there. Algeria has shown up, and for the first time, a dot there in Russia. So so great. And then also, I see one there in the UAE, and I have to think that that's probably our man in Dubai, Ron Sparks, EG5RS. So we see on the map there, Ron, I think that's probably you. Fine business. Let's see. Looking through my list. Oh, a couple of announcements here to make. The ARRL Homebrew Contest. Mike and I were talking about this way back when it started, and there was all kinds of discussions about what rigs could be included and what couldn't be included, but we have winners, and the winners are Jim, WA2EUJ, for the PC-supported, the computer-supported design, and then a guy well-known to all of us, a regular contributor to the QRPL list and a very important person in the QRP community, Steve Melt Solder Weber, KD1JV, won the non-computer entry. I think that's the part of the program that most of us were watching. Of course, they're both important and interesting, but at the kind of low end of the technology spectrum, I think Steve's the category was what people were watching most. So congratulations to both Steve and Jim, and to the ARRL for running a real interesting contest. We look forward to the articles that are going to appear in QST about the two designs. Let's see, looking through the list. Just one thing to mention. My kind of work day changed technologically a bit this week. I'm usually far behind the times on these things, so you guys, many of you, who are more technologically advanced, are probably going to roll your eyes at this point and realize what a troglodyte I can be technologically. But at work, they gave me a new BlackBerry, and so now it's in lieu of or in combination with the cell phone. So now I got the cell phone BlackBerry there, and I guess getting older and becoming a bit of a kind of a Luddite. I said, what is this thing? And I looked at it, and I was anxious. I was kind of skeptical at first, but, man, this thing is just packed with features. I don't know if you guys are walking around with these things, too, but one of the great benefits of this thing is that it's for the first time, I've now have a kind of really useful, easy-to-use, completely portable a web browser strapped to my belt as I walk around. And I can, as I travel around, I can read the QRPL list and things like that, and keep up with the Solder Smoke email. And it's just great. I can get the Google and Yahoo and everything else on there. And really, really cool, the thing has a GPS feature built in, and there's a way in. I've downloaded Google Earth. And with a tracker in there, so anytime I want, I can just pull this thing out and find my exact location. And then, as I ride to work on the bus in the morning here, I can watch my progress through the streets of Rome. It updates pretty frequently, and it's just an amazing little piece of technology. So there, it's certainly not QRP. Well, I guess it's QRP, but it's a long way from homebrew. But it's fun, and I had it with me when we were up in Florence a couple weeks ago, and was able to. I like to get up. If I get up, you guys are probably like me. If you're away from the shack, I mean, my routine is to get up early in the morning and come in here in the shack. And if we're traveling, it's annoying to me that I kind of get completely away from that routine. But I was pretty happy. I got up at the same hour, and I instead of having the entire shack and the computer with me, I had the shortwave receiver and the BlackBerry. And it was almost like having, well, some of the most important elements of the home ham shack. Right there with me. So, I recommend it. It's pretty neat. I am thinking about launching a campaign here. I'm just going to fire this kind of a warning shot across the bow here. there's a book that I really, really liked, and it's helped me a lot in understanding the science and physics behind the radio. It's called From Atoms to Amperes by F.A. Wilson. It's published by Babini Books, these great little technical books out of London. And for me, the best one has been Atoms to Amperes. It's been out of print for a long time. So I'm thinking about harnessing the awesome power of the worldwide Solder Smoke community to launch some sort of email campaign to try to convince Babini to get this thing back in print in one way or another. So stay tuned. We'll explore this. We'll have to consult with our legal and technical advisors on this matter. But it could be fun. We might be able to get a book back into print. Let's see what else. I've downloaded the demo version of EasyNeck 5.0 by Roy there, and I've not yet played with it, but I've been spending all my time actually up on the roof with the antenna, so I haven't had a chance to play with that, but I look forward to it. And before we move to the portion of the show introduced by the awesome gong, I want to play for you a band sweep segment. We haven't had band sweep in a while, and we had a contribution come in this week. Steve, G0KYA, very kindly sent in a very interesting band sweep. It's from his SDR, software-derived radio, a 40-meter, from his receiver. Let me get the details here. Got it. Let's see. Band sweep segment. Yeah, this was created using a Soft Rock SDR 4080 receiver. The one costs about £30 in the UK. The first half of the segment is the low end of 80 meters in the early evening using his loft-mounted 80-meter trap dipole. The second half is the middle SSB segment of 40 meters. And you can hear several European stations. Steve says it's an amazing little receiver for its size and cost. He says it was his first and probably last surface mount construction project, as it was way too fiddly. It says here he had problems getting it going because of the difficulty with getting some of the little tiny solder joints going. But he's got it working. And he says he kind of laments the fact that he still likes the old-fashioned knobs and dials, but this SDR stuff looks like it's the way rigs will go. So anyway, we'll play Steve's band sweep segment, and thanks for sending that in. Thank you.
that problem, Vincent. AI6IN.
Golf Zero Kilo X-ray Victor. Thank you, Vincent. Bye bye, good luck.
Delta Hotel, this is Japan Charlie, 59 also, thank you. Romeo Charlie, Sierra, Victor, Romeo Charlie, Sierra,
CQ, this is Harry Alpha 8, Radio Charlie. Hotel Alpha 8, Radio Charlie, I'm standing by.
Bueno, si llamaste no te escuché, no te escucho. Las condiciones de tu manera no están buenas, están largas. Te escucho 5758, Alfonso. Pero sin ningún tipo de problema, como... Y como verás, hay mucho QRM también aquí en la banda ahí de 40. A 8 Alfa Lima, QSO y A8 DO.
Okay, great. Thanks, Steve. Very interesting. And now it's time for
Solder Smoke Mailbag.
That is awesome. And we have a truly awesome amount of mail this week. I love getting all of it, and I struggle to keep track of it here. Forgive me if I miss anything, but let me just go through the mail. First, let me mention earlier on when I was talking about the contest, there were a number of other entries that also received real favorable mention in the announcement of the contest results. Two other entries were in there. One was from Doug, November 3, Zulu, India, and we talked about his entry here in Solder Smoke a while back. And Dave and Nancy Mike Zero Sierra. Fine business to both you guys. I know it was really tough to try to meet especially that $50 limit there. That was hard. So congratulations to both of you for getting entries. And we've looked at Doug's design and look forward to seeing more on Dave's project also. Frank, VK2AKG. Was one of many people to very kindly write in and with suggestions about how I could deal with my antenna dilemmas. And Frank, he suggested that the construction of homebrew stealth ladder line made from perhaps from 30-gauge wire with little kind of translucent spacers there. I thought about that. I may eventually go that way. For now, I just have... Basically, the coax goes to the window, and then from the coax, it just goes. I have one bit of 30-gauge wire going up to the roof, to the main part of the antenna, and then the portion of the antenna that went down to the ground that was the antenna before now attaches to the outer braid and becomes, I guess, the bottom part or the counterpoise or the ground portion of the system. And it seems to be working out pretty well. Thanks for that note, Frank. Gil, Nancy 4, Charlie Whiskey, he writes in with some stealth suggestions. He's not crazy about the use of monofilament in stealth antennas because he says it pretty much fluoresces when the sun gets on it. So that's not good, and I bought some monofilament. I have it here, but I in my operations, my construction operations yesterday, I haven't put it to use, and the thing looks pretty invisible at this point. Wink Whiskey Alpha 8 Kilo Oscar Quebec is also a user of 30 gauge wire. He has been loading up the the rain gutter and the rain spout on his house for many years, and he recently added, I think he said 50 feet or so of wire off the end. It seems to work out real fine for him. He's also a loyal user of Drake equipment. Fine business on that. A wink. It's thanks for sending that to us. Jim, let's see, anything else on the antenna front? I think that's it for antennas. Jim, N9ESH, writes in with an observation about this 1939 homebrew radio video that we talked about a while back. You can find a link to it on the Gadgeteer News website. It was a real classic piece from the 30s, 1939 to be exact, about homebrew ham radio and our heroes, our intrepid technical lads out there helping with lost airplanes and ships at sea and all. And he points out that there's a well-known movie personality or TV personality, somebody later became a TV personality in there. And apparently, if you look closely in that video, the Lone Ranger is in there. So, well, hi-o silver to you, Jim, and thanks for pointing that out for us. Dimitri, Kilo Echo 2 Hotel, wrote in with an interesting email, and he asks about podcasts in CW. And what do I think of that? Well, I don't know. I'm as you guys know, I'm a CW fan. I use it, but it seems to me to be kind of a not very appealing mixture of high tech and low tech. I like to think of CW as real simple equipment, and the thought of putting all that all that digital technology in the middle, and for the purpose of generating and sending a CW signal, I don't know. I think it's kind of overkill. I kind of like my CW from an oscillator with a couple of amplifier stages, maybe to a direct conversion receiver, and the thought of running it through all those microprocessors and turning it into MP3 files and then blasting it out over the internet. Well, of course, to each his own. And if you like that, go for it. I suppose if somebody wants to, it'd be great for code practice, sure. I mean, and I know a lot of guys are doing that. You take it and you load it into your MP3 player and you can practice code. That's the way I practice Italian these days. I walk around with Italian language podcasts and MP3s, and there are a couple out there on radio, so great. But a nice, interesting suggestion there, Dimitri, and he's put together an initial Morse code podcast, so you guys might want to check it out. I think if you just search for Kilo Echo 2 Hotel, you'll be able to find him. I'll try to post the link up on the Gadgeteer News page. Let's see. I've got a number of interesting and helpful emails on the mystery of Q11. This is the switching transistor in my HW8 that gave up the ghost. And I was complaining last week that nobody seemed to rise to the technical challenge and let me know what went wrong with Q11. But we got a number of emails here. Scott Christensen writes in. Let's see, it says there are transistors have a number of failure modes. You have meltdown, which is pretty much self-descriptive. Oxidization, he says, this is the most likely cause of my failure. A tiny leak in the encapsulation can cause oxygen to get in and change the gain characteristics and finally destroy the transistor. Mentions recrystallization. He says he saw this on a germanium transistor a while back. Thermal runaway. The device is too hot, increasing the amount of... Oh, yeah, we know about thermal runaway, Scott. I've got the results of thermal runaway kind of burned into both my thumbs here as I reached into the device and said, hey, I wonder if that thing's getting too hot. Anyway, yep, I think all those are possibilities. John, G8SEQ, writes in, and talks about A slow failure mode with some transistors is that when operating at high junction temperatures, diffusion takes place in the junction, altering its properties. The first sign of this is usually a reduction in transition frequency, FT, followed by reduced gain. I have found in the past that transistors that have been soldered in and out of circuits will work okay as switches, but don't function very well in RF circuits. So maybe your transistor has degraded so much that its gain was so low that it would no longer function reliably as a switch. So thanks for that. Very interesting. And then I got a really nice email from David N0 Yankee Mike Victor from Indiana, and he gives me some interesting advice on how to get a graphical understanding of the mixer operations. This is a technical point that I was struggling with a few episodes back. But then he goes on, he says, now to address episode 78's concerns on BJT failure. Solid-state devices work as they do because they have different concentrations of elements in different parts of the device. This allows us to create diodes, FETs, etc. It says here, one of the ways BJTs can fail is for the leads to it to fry. It's pretty simple. They can also lift off the surface a little. This makes a metal to semiconductor junction, which adds a diode to the contact. That can cause lots of problems, as you can imagine. It can also be temperature sensitive, such as things heat and cool, they expand and contract. That kind of sounds like what was going on with mine, because it worked out fine at the beginning, but then it degraded as the device stayed on. So I think we have a real good lead there. It says here, the most common long-term failure mode that doesn't come from thermal or electrical abuse is ion drive. Since these devices behave as they do because they have certain elements in some places and not in others, what do you think happens when they wander to where they shouldn't be? The behavior of the device changes, gain can drop, diodes can increase in voltage drop, etc. This kind of failure mode is slow and can be thought of as a kind of decay. He points out, very interesting, is that when these devices have square edges, static charges can build up. And we know this from square edges and all your experiments with Van de Graaff generators, and you put anything with a sharp edge there will have a very high, you get a very high voltage concentration. It says here, when enough ions get injected into one of these areas, they can cause physical stress on silicon. The silicon lattice, it can cause microcracks in the crystal. This can cause many problems that are hard to describe, which may not be intuitive. So lots of common transistors went through a number of revisions over their histories to solve some of these problems. And I think basically they're rounding off the edges on some of these things. So part of this comes down to basically static charges are higher at sharp corners than at smooth edges. So maybe some of those early transistors, we could say, almost kind of in a social sense, had some rough edges and sharp elbows. Thanks for that, David. And then another one, really another great response on this. Let me try to get it up on the screen here. Let's see, there it goes. Kevin, our friend in Christchurch, New Zealand, ZL3 Kilo Echo, writes in, and he looked at I think all of these answers are pointing in the same direction, but he actually pulled up the circuit, and he says, I believe the problem could be due to C91, which is the 2 microfarad capacitor connected from the collector of Q11 to ground. I imagine this capacitor is intended to give some shaping to the keyed waveform as well as a degree of decoupling. However, it's really not a good idea to do it this way. This is because as Q11 is keyed on, it has to charge the 2 microfarad capacitor from 0 volts to 10 volts in a very short space of time, in an instant basically. So each time Q11 switches on, it has to dump a very short pulse of high current into C91. The peak value of this current, i.e. at the instant of QL switch on, is likely to be well beyond the maximum current rating of Q11, and whilst it won't necessarily die immediately, I can quite believe that the transistor will deteriorate over a period of time and will eventually expire. He goes on to find, he went out onto the web and noticed some mods to this particular port, part of the HW8 circuit, that have been suggested over the years to address, mostly to address the key shaping issue with the HW8, but he believes that one of these that was designed to deal with choppy CW, which consists of the solution is to put a 0.47 microfarad capacitor from base to collector Q11. He says this is a reasonably elegant way of delaying Q11 switch on by providing negative feedback at higher frequencies, and it may well be the simplest solution of all. Thanks for that, Kevin, and thanks for the nice note from Christchurch there. Thanks also, Scott and John, for writing in on this. I think we've got it. I think it was a combination of them putting a lot of current through this this particular switching transistor, and the way I observed the kind of the failure mode here, it definitely did seem to be kind of temperature related. As the thing heated up, it seemed to degrade. So there we go. Thanks for that. Looking also through the email, got a very nice note from Farhan on Pat Hawker, G3VA, and technical topics. He, without having heard of the reaction of West, W7ZOI, Farhan chimed in almost at exactly the same time with very, very similar sentiments about Pat Hawker, G3VA, and his technical topics column. As you guys will recall, Pat, after many years of service to the amateur radio fraternity, has decided to stop publishing technical topics in RadCom. And Farhan, very much in the same line of thinking as Wes, says that we should all raise our soldering irons in a three cheers salute for Pat Hawker. So thanks again, Pat, and thanks to Farhan for writing in on that. Let's see, Seth W8 Foxtrot Golf in Charleston. Seth writes in from I think on the. About the group build. Is a group build going to be launched? And let's see. And he sent me some details. Jason has been in the development state of the. Let's see. Give me the URL. But my printer, my printer ink is gone, so I don't have the URL. But there's a group build going on right now, and they're building. The final product will be a 20 meter CW rig. The details are as followed: a direct conversion QRP CW transceiver with heterodyne VFO, VFO crystal resonator combinations for all the amateur bands, 75 kilohertz of tuning, 5 watts output, solid-state semi-QSK TR switching and mute, and the kit, they kitted it up, and it was $50, and it's getting ready to go. NA5N did beta testing on it, and I think that you guys should be able to find this. I think it's about ready to kick off. So if you want to get involved, I think the time to do it is now. And I think if you did a search on the QRPL list for a group build, you'll find all the information you need. And like I said, Seth W8FG has more info. So good luck with that project, guys, and please keep us posted. Finally, a really important bit. And this is a difficult one for me, guys. So I'm looking for some help here. Our friend Ramakrishnan, VU3RDD, our man in Bangalore, who's been a loyal Solder Smoke listener and correspondent over the years. You'll recall that we've suffered along with Ramakrishnan as he dealt with the really loud RF interference caused by power line transformers. There are rumors that agents of Solder Smoke were involved in the physical destruction of several of those transformers. I'd like to deny those rumors right now. We had nothing to do with it. They just blew up very fortuitously soon after Ramakrishnan's problems were mentioned here on the show. This is pure coincidence. Ramakrishnan is about ready to change locations, and he's moving from what for us is one exotic location to another. He's going to Singapore on a work assignment, I guess. So congratulations on that, Ramakrishnan. We hope to be actually working you on the air from Singapore. That would be great. And I'm sure you're going to have a good, really good ham radio experience there. I'm sure there's some very, very fine business amateur radio activity in that country. We have many friends from Singapore, and a great place, and I think a good place for somebody who's interested in technology to be. So great. But now Ramakrishnan puts me in a real difficult dilemma here. Long-time listeners of Solder Smoke will know my problem. He's looking for... And I understand why he's looking for it. I've been there myself. You guys have too. He has been a great fan of and user of experimental methods in RF design. The book that is for many of us our kind of technical most important source of information. But he finds himself yearning for ownership of a copy of Solid State Design for the Radio Amateurs, SSDRA, also by our friend Wes, and Doug DeMaul was a major author of that one too. Now Wes tells us all the time that we really don't need SSDRA these days, that everything we need, everything important from that book was incorporated into experimental methods, and I of course believe him, but I really like SSDRA, and when Wes and I met up in San Diego last summer, I had with me SSDRA, and I asked him to sign that one for me, and he did. So I have my original signed copy of SSDRA, and I mentioned this, and I was open about this, guys. I discussed the moral peril of owning two copies of this book at a time when they're difficult to find and difficult to come by. And Mike and I discussed this. Should a radio amateur in good conscience own more than one copy of the by now rare SSDRA? I have two. You know, fellas, I know people out there who have three or more. And I think they are the ones that we should... Be looking at this point, because here's the thing: Ramakrishnan wants one. We have to try to find him one. We have to uphold the probably the most important tradition of the amateur radio brotherhood, and that's mutual support. And our brother Ramakrishnan, he needs a copy of Solid State Design for the Radio Amateur. And unless one of you step forward, I'm going to have to give up my more pristine backup copy of SSDRA. I can't. There's just no way I can give him the one that Wes signed. That's too important to me personally. But that copy, the one that Wes signed, is the really messed up one. The one that's been through the years of humidity in the Dominican Republic. The one that was through the flood in my ham shack in the Azores. The one that has all my kind of notes on it, the one that's almost on the point of being illegible in some places, but that's the one I have, and then now I have the other one that I bought in case I am no longer able to read the first one. But if somebody doesn't come up with an extra copy that we can get for our man Ramakrishnan, I'm going to have to send him the new one. So please help me. Help me keep my second copy of SSDRA, and help Ramakrishnan locate one. He's not looking for a donation. He's just looking for somebody to identify a source. He's willing to to cover the costs, of course, but that's the easy part. The hard part is finding one, and finding one that's not being sold for $400 or something like that. That's a bit over the top. I mean, it's a good book, but I'm sure Wes would agree that's kind of that's kind of too much. We've joked about pulling our money out of mutual funds in the stock market and investing exclusively in old copies of Solid State Design for the Radio Amateur. Anyway, let me know if you have one there, guys, because we're really looking for it, and we want to help out Ramakrishnan. Let's see. Well, one more thing I wanted to mention in the technical area. Let me check the time here. Yeah, it's about that time. Well, I'll leave this for next week because I've been, as I tune my little T-Network tuner here, I've been thinking about how it works, and it causes me to go to the books, and I've been thinking about L-Networks and T-Network tuners. Fascinating technology. And, well, we'll talk about that next week. Right now, it's time for the next installment of our QSO with our solder smoke representative in the United Arab Emirates in Dubai, Ron Sparks, EG5RS. I think we'll have this may be the last installment of our QSO. We'll have to have a new one. It's been a while now, so it's about time for us to get back on the Echo Link and talk to folks. But I've really enjoyed this QSO, and I hope you guys are liking it too. So I'll put it on at this point. And over to you, Ron.
Yeah, this is AG5RS. Yeah, I agree with you. When you got the Mac, you just got to push some electrons around. That's all there is to it. So a couple of other things that the listeners might enjoy knowing, especially if any of them are out in fairly remote areas. I just discovered, well, there's two things that kind of drive me this direction. One, here in Dubai, I have had very good luck in finding completely assembled stuff, but finding individual components has been a bit of a chase. It's really been difficult to find like just a place that has potentiometers or resistors. So I happened on a lady in the coffee shop the other day, and she told me about this neat service called Aramex Shop and Ship, and I signed up for it. What they do, Aramex is a competitor to DHL or FedEx or UPS, and they have a program where you get a U.S. and a U.K. shipping address, and then they work as a freight forwarder to ship from that address back to wherever you are, kind of like the old APO addresses worked. So now I have a U.S. shipping address in New York somewhere, and if I need to place an order from Mouser or DigiKey or one of those people, I can place the order. They ship just like they would normally to New York, and then Aramex picks it up and delivers it to my door. I think they make two times a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, they ship from New York to Dubai. So for anybody that's in kind of remote areas, if you have an Aramex package delivery place near you, that's certainly something you can use to feed the habit that goes along with the Mac. The other thing I forgot to mention is the reason for the white duct tape or colored duct tape in the Sandstorm is that when you run your coax out the window, if you find that the window won't close completely without messing the coax up, you can use just a little bit of duct tape across there, and depending on how skillful you are at applying it, and of course, if you've got the knack, you've probably used enough of it that you're really good at it. You can't even see it, and it seals out the breezes and wind and rain and sand and such like that, so it works pretty well for that. Those are just a couple of little tricks that I've learned since I've been here and kind of over the years. M0HBR, this is AG5.
All right, good to know. Good to know, Ron. Yeah. These are the kind of things that the true radio amateurs and victims of the NAC need to know about, because we all do have that coax going through the window that prevents it from ever being properly closed. I'm envious of the guys who have planned, who've been able to plan for the, you know, the special connector through the wall for the coax when they're, you know, designing and building the new house. But for those of us who move around like this, of course, that's there's no possibility of that. So it's out the window. The stuff goes. And, well, it sounds interesting. We don't have to deal with sandstorms or anything like that here, of course. And the weather in Rome is, of course, usually great. Even in the winter, it doesn't really get that cold here. I can hear the birds chirping outside right now. And we had the kids on the beach on December 30th. It wasn't that warm, but they were putting their feet in the water. So winters are pretty mild here. In terms of other projects here, looking ahead, I do feel the need to melt some solder. And when I was in London, I was, as part of my kind of teach myself how to use LT Spice and learn a little bit more about amplifier design and biasing and loading of transistor amplifiers, I was experimenting with circuits for a DSB transmitter for 20 meters, and it started out with a ceramic resonator, VXO, or variable ceramic oscillator, or whatever you'd call it. But instead of the crystals, it was using two ceramic resonators, and I seemed to be able to. And they were operating, I think, at around 14.2 or 14.25 megahertz. It was very, very. No, I think it was 14.3. Yeah, it was very convenient for the 20 meter band, and I was able to. And they're not quite as stable as real crystals, but better stability than you get with an LC circuit at that frequency, and quite a bit more variability when you put a cap and a coil, or just a cap across or in series with them. So that was my the main element for the kind of the core of the DSB transmitter, and I went to a couple stages of amplification so that the thing could drive the balance modulator. And I hadn't got to the audio circuits yet, but this thing might turn into the first Rome rig here. I might just come up with a little 20 meter DSB transmitter just to put something together and have an excuse to melt some solder. I really should work on the shack first, but you know how it is. You know, you don't want to waste time on shelving and things like that when there's real solder to be melted, Ron. What are your projects? What's on the horizon there now that you're almost set up in Dubai? HE5 RS M0 HBR.
M0 HBR. This is HE5 RS. I'll please go ahead with that ceramic resonator. I was trying to remember. Those were very common parts in either something like an old computer modem or something that I recall just buckets of them being readily available, and that would probably be a great project to put together, build your Rome rig, and then stick the design out on the Gadgeteer so that those folks that are building radios from scrap parts like you were talking about some of your Caribbean and Cuban friends having to do, and some of the other remote parts of the world. Old computer parts are easy to get your hands on in most places, and so I think that ceramic resonator idea is a great one, and you ought to pursue that. As far as my stuff here, the first thing that I'm going to do, I wanted to get familiar with Linux and crank it up because it's easy to get software for when you're someplace where you can't just go down to the corner store and buy software. So I've now got the Linux box up and running, and the next step that I want to take, I bought a kit from a gentleman in Germany, and I'm going to put together an infrared interface for my desktop unit here so that I can control the thing from an infrared remote while I'm head down on the bench and building away. And then I guess my first project of size, I'm determined I'm going to put together this SDR. I've been collecting the components for it since Gerald Youngblood first came out with his very first two boards, and I've never taken the time to stick that together.
All right, thanks very much. So that wraps up this week's edition of Solder Smoke. Thanks for listening, and keep those emails coming in. The feedback is great; it's a very important part of the show. It keeps us banging the gong here at the mailbag portion of the show, and we really enjoy it. So, have a real good week. Good luck, good DX, good QRP. Keep those soldering irons melted solder, and good luck with all your projects. 7-3 from Rome.